Nice graphic also, thank you. All righty, and next we have Robin Hadlock.
Seely, yes.
So I have a PowerPoint. I don't know if you want me to start there and move over here.
Are you able to hear her? Is everyone able to hear?
Being dependent on clamming and wrinkling, we're also dependent on the environment, the habitat for the clams and the wrinkles. When we're clamming, we find a heck of a lot more clams underneath the seaweed in many places than you do on an open clam flat sometimes. If you picture the rockweed standing up when the tide's in, picture all the clams bad in the water. It makes sense because the rockweed probably slows the current down enough for the clams to settle. You know, we've always thought too that when the clams are really tiny like that and maybe digging in, that the rockweed should have some 100 degree summer weather from them burning up. It keeps them moist. They don't dry out. And in the wintertime, yeah, I think it helps to protect them from the cold as well. When we're wrinkling, in the wintertime especially, wrinkles seem to come along the bottom of ledges and under the seaweed. If you lift the seaweed, the wrinkles will be all piled up. The seaweed is what protects the wrinkles in the wintertime, and you always, when you're picking wrinkles, you always lift the seaweed to get the wrinkles because they pile up all along the base of rocks and ledges under the seaweed. So when you remove the seaweed, there goes your clams, there goes your wrinkles, and I, you know, suspect it's also protecting baby lobsters, maybe, and scallop spat. You know, they're taking it out of here. And what is it doing to the bay? What are we doing to the bay?
Okay, that was the last thing I needed to say.
Smooth sound. So I apologize for those of you who couldn't hear that. Those were two of my neighbors in Washington County.
Excuse me. Right. Thank you.
Those were two of my neighbors in Washington County, and I'm here today to tell you that, of course, with you, we all want sustainable fisheries. We all want to sustain fishermen and communities that depend on fishing. I'm Dr. Robin Hadlock Seely. I'm a marine ecologist and senior research associate at Cornell University, where I teach at the Shoals Marine Laboratory. If you haven't heard of Shoals, you have a flyer in your packet. Shoals Marine Lab is on Appledore Island, which is claimed by the town of Kittery. I'm a seventh generation Mainer and a resident of Pembroke on Cobscook Bay. I earned undergraduate and my PhD degree in biology, but I started with my neighbors Julie and Adam from Trescott, because with all of the education I have, I don't know a fraction of what they know about the coast. When I come before this committee, and have in the past, I wear three different hats. One, a professional marine ecologist who's written a professional paper about rockweed and the impacts of harvest and management in Maine and Canada. There's a page one of that paper in your packet. I also represent Shoals Marine Laboratory, and you have the flyer for Shoals. And I also represent the Rockweed Coalition, for which I'm one of two co-directors. And today, I'm representing the Rockweed Coalition. Our mission is to promote conservation of intertidal marine habitat, including rockweed, to protect Maine's fisheries and wildlife. And our website can be found on the small card in your packet. We're a coalition of fishermen, property owners, residents, and biologists based in Washington County, but now expanding to other areas of the coast. For example, we actively supported the law that created the rockweed management area in Cobscook Bay, passed by this committee and made law in 2009. So why all this fuss about a seaweed, and why the controversy about this particular seaweed? Most of us know rockweed is the stuff we slip on at the shore at low tide. But at high tide, it becomes a three-dimensional underwater forest for fish and other marine species. I've been monitoring periwinkles and green crabs in Cobscook Bay since 1983. I started caring a lot about this seaweed when one of my long-term study sites in Eastport for monitoring green crabs and periwinkles was wrecked in 2008 by excessive rockweed harvesting. And here are the reasons that we should all care. The sustainable rockweed fishery. Is it really? No one knows whether cutting rockweed is ecologically sustainable or not. You can find that on page 38 of last year's rockweed management plan. No one knows the long-term impact of cutting rockweed on the nearshore ecosystem. And that question that's in the biggest font there is perhaps the most important question to which we don't know the answer. Will cumulative effects of successive harvest restructure habitat and/or ecosystems? And although it may be considered a fishery under a technicality in the rules of DMR that define any marine organism as a fish, no biologist, fisherman, or member of the public, or member of the legislature, is going to confuse this plant with a fish. We all want sustainable fisheries. We all want to sustain fishermen and communities that depend on fishing. If a rockweed bed were like a hayfield, and mowing rockweed were like mowing the grass, then all we would care about is whether there's enough plant material growing back so it can be cut again and sold for 3 cents a pound. But a rockweed bed is not a hayfield. It's an underwater forest with underwater trees that have a canopy, just as trees on land have a leafy canopy. 150 different organisms use this underwater forest. It has a three-dimensional architecture, you can see, and these underwater trees can be 6 feet tall. Fish use the rockweed forest. 35 species of fish, including 21 commercial species, those are the ones highlighted in yellow on this table, which you also have in your packet, including species like cod, herring, pollock, and flounder. In addition, lobster go up in the rockweed forest at night. Some juvenile lobster nursery areas that Diane Cowan of the Lobster Conservancy studies are underneath rocks and underneath the rockweed forest. The landings of rockweed, according to DMR, have risen from about 1 million tons in the mid-90s to last year, 17 million tons. It was 16.5, but it's recently been updated to 17 million tons. And the area over which rockweed is harvested, and therefore the area over which habitat is being altered, has expanded. The bays that are affected now include Cobscook Bay, Pleasant Bay, Gouldsboro Bay, Frenchman's Bay, Casco Bay, Mungus, Congas Bay, etc. Does rockweed harvesting alter habitat structure and function of the rockweed forest in these bays? Maine's own rockweed management plan says we don't know. Where's the rockweed habitat that supports our fisheries going? It brings 3 cents a pound at the dock, apparently, and gets processed into products for agribusiness, put on golf courses in New Jersey that likely would not even allow a periwinkle picker from Washington County into the parking lot, fed to cattle, or made into dog biscuits. So the landings of seaweed, which is almost all rockweed, are worth $465,000 in 2013, while the periwinkle fishery is worth about twice that, and of course, lobsters, $364 million. Most of our fisheries are depleted or under threat, and we're trying to bring them back. Our fisheries are facing acidification, ocean warming, microplastics, and runoff pollution. Many of these environmental problems seem bigger than any one community, one state, or one region can solve. But solving the problem of taking fish habitat, rockweed habitat, for golf courses is much easier. Just don't take too much, be really careful when you cut it, and don't take it from the wrong place. Leave it in Maine waters to sustain Maine fisheries and communities. For in Washington County and in other communities, fishermen are trying to patch together 12 months of income from periwinkling, clamming, elvering, scalloping. For many, it gets very, very close to the edge, particularly in winter, and particularly a winter like this one. For example, my neighbor in Pembroke only got half plowed out of her house last week because the guy plowing her out had to leave suddenly so he could go buy clams from someone who needed to sell those clams by the end of the day to buy enough oil to keep his family warm. Some of the periwinklers you see are moms trying to earn enough to buy diapers, or dads also trying to get $100 worth of heating oil in the tank.
So imagine how they feel
when this happens to the ledges where they work. In Copscook Bay, machine harvesting of rockweed has been damaging rockweed beds since at least 2012. And here you have a sequence of what happened to one ledge over 2 years' time. In August 2012, it was machine harvested where those bare areas are. Well, I can't talk there in here. And that was followed in March 2013, 18 months later, by a settlement of green algae where the rockweed had been, because nature doesn't like a vacuum, just like in the forest. When you clear an area, other things will come in. And recently, in August 2014, I went back 2 years later, and that rockweed bed with its tall canopy, 4 to 6 foot plants, is now basically a shrubby hedge of a different species called fucus. So that ledge has been, the top of that ledge has been turned from an ascophyllum ledge into a fucus ledge. And the fucus will not replace the services that the ascophyllum was providing. And furthermore, based on data from Dr. Vadas at the University of Maine, it will probably take 12 years plus for the succession to go all the way through and for that ledge to come back in rockweed. Next. So just last summer, it happened again. The machine harvester went through. The right photo was taken about a month after the machine was on the ledge, and the left-hand photo was taken at the same time from an adjacent ledge where there hadn't been any machine harvesting. And I hope you can see the difference between what happened to the ledge on the right-hand side versus the natural dense cover of rockweed on the left-hand side.
So that's what the damage looks like at low tide, and this is what it looks like at high tide. First, in the area that hadn't been cut,
and now from the area that was cut. And right at the end of this clip, you can see some of these big rockweed trees that were missed by the cutter, overarching the rest of it. Because of rockweed's slow growth rate, repeated cutting in the same place reduces canopy height over the entire bed. It grows back very slowly,
about 1 inch a year in Copscook. So here's a plant that I cut 16 months prior. The cut line was where the red dotted lines, dashed lines are up at the top of the plant. This had been an 80 centimeter tall plant. And you can see that just a few centimeters have grown back after 16 months. Now, Copscook Bay is colder than other bays in Maine, so it may be that the growth rate in Copscook is probably lower than it is elsewhere in the coast where the water is warmer. But that is a lower limit for what can grow back in 1 year in Copscook. And this was recognized in the Canadian government by the Canadian government in 2013, where they said the regrowth to pre-harvest biomass after 1 year was simply a production of shorter, bushier plants rather than a recovery of the original elongated canopy. So canopy is what we want. Canopy provides the habitat for the creatures that need it. And the canopy certainly doesn't grow right back. The regrowth to pre-harvest biomass may come, but not. It doesn't come from increase in stature or height, but from shorter, bushier plants. Next, please. So what do other states do? I recently did a recheck of other state regulations and whether they allow commercial rockweed cutting, and the results are there. New Hampshire doesn't. Massachusetts sort of does, but only floating. Oregon, there's no ascophyllum on the West Coast, but for similar species, intertidal seaweeds on the West Coast. Oregon and Washington have a complete prohibition against commercial intertidal seaweed cutting. And California, I think, does not. I'm still trying to figure that out. They have a special clause about only true kelps and edible seaweeds being allowed to be commercially cut, which the fucoids are not.
So in summary, we need a mature rockweed forest for healthy ecosystem structure and function, and to continue to allow increased rockweed cutting each year while at the same time admitting we don't have a clue about long-term impacts to this important marine habitat seems reckless. What we try to do is to protect a mature forest providing for species that Maine fishermen and you and we all care about, because we all want sustainable fisheries, we all want to sustain fishermen and the communities that depend on fishing. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. And questions, please? Representative Battle.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Okay, I'm going to ask this. What is the basic difference between rockweed and seaweed?
Rockweed is a kind of seaweed.
It is a, okay. Sorry, it was just boggled my mind. I just had to ask them.
That's okay.
I don't know why, but.
Didn't you say that rockweed is the stuff that we used to complain about slipping on the rocks?
Yes, it's very, very abundant, and most people in Maine know it just because they've fallen
right
around.
So when we were kids, that's
yeah. Or sometimes stomping on it to make it go snap.
People live by the golf course.
But you're forgiven. thank you, Senator Merrimont.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're not saying that the mechanical harvester cuts more than it's supposed to. It's just that that's not the way to phrase it. We have to leave 16 inches, is it?
That's the regulation now, yes.
And so the mechanical harvester leaves the 16 inches, but you're saying that's too aggressive in areas where it's being used? Is that what you're saying?
In my opinion, not in my opinion, based on the Canadian literature, the mechanical harvester takes a lot more roots or holdfasts of the seaweed off the rock. There's data on that from Canada, and it takes more holdfasts, leaving those open, bare areas of rock. The rule in Maine is it has to be cut at 16 inches, and that means no holdfasts can be removed.
Right.
Because,
so you're saying that the mechanical harvester is breaking the law just by its nature, and we already have a law, and it needs to be more actively enforced, for one thing.
My experience is in Cobscook Bay, and I've shown you what's happening in Cobscook Bay. I don't know what's happening elsewhere in the state. If you're asking my opinion about mechanical harvesters, they're not used in Canada, and I would be much happier if they weren't used in Maine, because I think they have the potential to cause much more damage.
Gee, if only the commissioner could hear this.
Okay.
Wait a minute, he's here.
Are you looking for Commissioner Kelleher's response?
No, just that he was here to hear it.
Oh. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am hearing.
Thank you. Okay. Co-chair Kumiega, please.
Thank you. And just the harvest numbers, I got a note that the landings are pounds, not tons, so it's 17.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say tons? I'm sorry. That was a total mistake on my part. I meant to say pounds. I think it said pounds on the slide.
Thank you. Representative.
My understanding is that one of the reasons that Canada, there may be ecological reasons, but they also feel that hand harvesting is an employment issue.
Yep. There were those two reasons.
Okay.
One was the over-harvest potential, and the other was providing more employment by not having a mechanized way of doing it.
Thanks.
Yep.
Great. Thank you. Representative Sawicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your time. Just a quick question. Based on all the research you've done into rockweed and the importance it has in the ecosystem, do you believe there's any, should we be harvesting it at all?
I think that's a really legitimate question, and I get asked that a lot. And you can imagine a scale of harvest from no harvest, which would be completely ecologically sustainable, and over-harvest, which is not ecologically sustainable. There's something in the middle where it probably is ecologically sustainable. I feel sure of that. The problem is we don't know where that is, and we continue to do it without knowing where that is.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you for your presentation. Do you know of any other groups or studies that are looking at the seaweed harvest throughout the coast of Maine instead of just Cobbs Cook Bay?
There are a lot of individual projects that are going on, research projects that are going along the coast, not just in Cobbs Cook, but looking at different sites.
I guess I didn't know if you knew of any specific other organizations that are looking at the rockweed harvest.
There are experiments going on. Dr. Beal from University of Maine at Machias has been doing some long-term experiments of 1 to 2 to 3 years, I think. There's a researcher at Unity College who's doing some work. There are researchers at Bowdoin who are doing some work. That's what springs to mind at the moment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Very
informative. Appreciate your time.